Good evening to you, and welcome to the show, History and You, with George Rodriguez Walling.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, History and You, the show where you decide what history becomes. I am your host, George Rodriguez Walling, and I am very happy to be here with you this evening. If you want to call in and contribute your thoughts, please do so at toll-free 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Please call me and tell me your views. If not, send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. You'll also find me on www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. That's www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. Tonight's show is brought to you by the folks at FX Software and Sweet Pea Women's Apparel by Stacy Frotti. Tonight's topic, the modern Romans. Tonight's show will be presented a little differently this time. Instead of discussing one topic, I'll be addressing three different issues as separate segments of current news. The first segment will consider the case of Anthony Weiner, followed by the Trayvon Martin case, and the third segment will revisit the Obama leadership. Also here tonight to discuss and debate these issues with me is a very well-established architect by profession in the Miami and surrounding South Florida area for the past 30 years now. This gentleman is usually very well-informed and equally concerned with the issues of the day. My co-host this evening also happens to be my brother. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I present Mr. Alfredo Rodriguez Walling. Welcome to the show, Alfred.
Well, thank you very much, George, and thank you for inviting me. And I look forward to this show.
You're very welcome. And okay, let's begin. Let me start this new format by sharing a few thoughts about Anthony Weiner. And then we'll discuss the effects of his actions and take a few calls along the way, if any. The Modern Romans was a brief publication made available in 1975 by the Worldwide Church of God Press, which depicted 20th century Americans as the modern Romans of today. The reading attempts to make positive correlations between the causes that led the once mighty Roman Empire to implode and destroy the entire civilization with the same or similar causes that currently plagues American society. Years later, in 1996, Robert Bork, a federal appellate court judge at the time, made a very poignant and similar argument in his book, Slouching Toward Gomorrah, also predicting that modern liberalism would ultimately contribute to the demise of the United States as well. And like these claims, there have been many other authorities that have freely committed to the same prediction, because all observations have pointed to the same direction and have drawn the same conclusions. American deterioration is imminent. Like the old Roman arrogance, the modern Romans have, by and large, tolerated with total idleness the rapid decline of American morality into a state of sloth and lethargic decadence. The once well-known sinews of American resolve have become the very cornerstones of mush and ambiguity that roll in and out of our lives like the fog that will forever hide the clarity of our character. When considering the Weiner case, I really don't know whom to blame more, the New York electorate, the American public at large, the liberal media, the Democratic Party, his wife, or Weiner himself. But like the Weiner case, there have also been a long list of others who have challenged and betrayed the public trusts that came with public office. For example, our beloved mayor of San Diego, the Honorable Bob Filner, who in his infinite wisdom has dared to justify in public his inappropriate brooches with women as, quote, I'm just being a huggable guy, unquote. Bill Clinton, having his own brand of oral sex in the Oval Office, and who can forget the famous stain on the dress? The myriad of indiscretions performed by the Kennedy brothers in both the Oval Office and at poolside. The adventurous European affairs of our man Ike, General Eisenhower, for those who don't know. The frequent friskiness of FDR, regardless of his paralytic condition. The lustful affabilities of both Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, who together with their wit for politics also made time for quiet rendezvous with private attractions. And God knows how many other scores of examples out there, but don't have time to cover. It would not be fair to bring out the case of Anthony Weiner alone as the only lone wolf in the prairie, but I don't mind bringing it out as one of the most egregious ones to come along in a long time. When considering what the Democratic Party is putting out there for the public to follow and be inspired by, it's scary. What's worse, when you think of what Weiner did in particular, and did twice, it is a freak of nature. To start, this man actually got naked, took a close-up picture of his wiener, and posted it on the internet for any and all to see. Along with the obvious indecency of the act itself, this guy also included some racy text to go along with the pictures he took of himself to a collection of women. This man is demented. An excellent example of a person who is remarkably inadequate, exceptionally vulgar, and alarmingly lustful for the personal intimacy and sexual attention he'll never have in his life. This wretched excuse of a human being, from the moment his mother brought him screaming into the world up to his last pathetic breath of life, he's the type who will always find a way to soil up everything that's good in America. I resent everything about him because he brings a bad name to a good people. If elected mayor of New York, he would bring incompetence and corruption to the office, not to mention another further example of a dysfunctional politician to our society. I have never regarded anyone with so much contempt as I do for this abject train wreck of a person. And why? Because of the moral danger and ethical damage he causes by example to the democratic way of life, to the institution of marriage, to an already crippled political system, to the nobility of schools, and to the innocence of children. This is not to give Bill Clinton, the Kennedy boys, and so many others a free pass or a lighter sentence for their premeditated adventures, but their circumstances were cloaked in secrecy and hidden away from anything that piqued and pried. But this guy, his ego would not permit anything less than a full disclosure of himself, and to disclose with intent to influence, to taint, and to demoralize the sanctity of what's left in public decency. The world can do better without Weiner, but to submit to our Christian values becomes more important in controlling personal anger and public outrage over a miserable and misguided whore of a man who would prostitute anything for personal gain and public power. So, Alfred, who is more to blame here? The American people, the New York electorate, the liberal media, the Democratic Party, his wife, or Weiner himself?
Well, let me tell you my point of view. As far as what Mr. Wiener is concerned, I think the whole nation knows, you know, what type of character he has. My main concern is, aside from his behavior, is his judgment. To me, that's the most important thing that I see and analyze in a politician, is the judgment. When he has done the types of things that he has done and publicized them, there are several things that are wrong with this individual.
You think so?
You know, and after what he has done, you know, and then go and publicize them, and then lie, to me, is very, very disturbing, to say the least.
Yeah, extremely. And you know, speaking about judgment, Alfredo, these are things that a very, how can I put it to you, a very rambunctious or a very defiant adolescent might do.
Well, but you should have seen this individual before his actions were publicized, when he was a representative in the House. He was the most arrogant and belligerent and accusatory characters in the House.
Oh, exceptionally, exceptionally rude.
Oh, you should have seen and how he would admonish things of much less importance than what he has done.
Admonish? I wouldn't even use that word. I would use the word berate. He would berate the media for asking questions.
He was a very irate person with others, especially anybody that was outside the Democratic Party.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Frankly, I'm not that concerned about the Democratic Party. I'm not concerned about him because I already know what type of person he is. What I'm concerned mostly is about the electorate and his constituents, because if he gets elected, now we have a huge problem, not only with the future that waits for New York, but that will define the state of mind that our society has in this moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. And the state of mind, if he is elected, would really reflect a problem.
Exactly. The most scary thing, that if his constituents decide that he's the most qualified person to lead the most important city in the planet, then, my God, we have a problem. Okay? Instead of Houston, we have a problem. New York, we have a problem. We have a society that condones this behavior, this judgment. I mean, and again, I go to the concept of judgment. Judgment is when you decide to do something or not, how to approach difficulties in life. And my God, he's no example to lead the most important city in the world.
No, absolutely not. And if you're talking about any other city of a smaller population, you know, we're not talking about Los Angeles.
You know, regardless of the city, I would be as concerned. The thing is that the impact in New York, it's even greater.
Of course. That's why I'm saying, you know, would there be a difference in the amount of people involved and connected from Des Moines, Iowa, or, you know, some other smaller populational center like that, Charlotte, North Carolina, Charleston, you know,
wherever,
but New York, wherever. Of all people, New York?
I mean, I have no problem with him as an individual. He can do whatever he wants. We live in a free society. If his wife condones it and forgives him and has no problem with it, I mean, that's their problem. But my God, the same brain will be leading the city of New York.
Yeah, that's the problem, the same brain.
The same brain will be leading.
Well, what I was saying before, Alfred, was that this is something that perhaps an unruly adolescent might do, but for God's sakes, this man is running for mayor of one of the largest cities in the entire world. And we're not talking about a defined adolescent here. We're talking about a grown man. He really has to have some kind of psychological
problem. And there are several factors, as we all know. One thing is, you know, this immaturity, for one thing, lack of judgment, lack of faithfulness to his wife.
Oh, yeah.
When you're unfaithful, and God knows, you know, that humans are unfaithful many times, but when you have that weakness in your character, you have a tendency to continue doing that, and he will be unfaithful to his constituency.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, because it becomes something endemic already in him.
Exactly. Sure. And another thing, he lies. He lies. And he likes to lie, and he continues lying.
Yeah. So, there's no turning back there.
What trust are you going to have in the head of that huge metropolis? It's like the president of a country.
Exactly. Alfred, let me ask you, do you think there's some kind of a connection between his wife and Hillary Clinton? Because they once worked together, or they continue to work together,
well,
or something?
Well, obviously, there is a compatibility, and there is a correspondence in the sense of they are the companion of men that have been unfaithful to them. So,
It's sort of like the idea of stick to your husband like I stuck to mine. And you're going to end up getting ahead type of thing.
There is a correspondence, no question about it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Bill Clinton had that weakness too with other women, that unfaithfulness was present. He didn't have this pathological problem of exhibit him in public, private parts, but he had an issue with unfaithfulness.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Monica Lewinsky
and
was another.
You know that you really brought in a very key word, pathological. Much of this problem really stems into the pathological. It really does.
Well, it's endemic in their character,
and
they suffer from that. I'm sure they... I think that Clinton might have battled with this issue over the years, but I don't think he has been very successful in overcoming this weakness, because Monica Lewinsky was not the only case. He had a long list of affairs before starting with Jennifer Flowers, was his mistress for about 14 years. I mean, that's a lot. A lot of years in a marriage.
Right. You know, and I'm wondering also, Alfredo, in his mind, I wonder to what degree it might be similar to, say, the smoker who says, no, I have control over this situation, or the alcoholic that says, I can quit anytime I want to. In his mind, in Wiener's mind, does he say, I've played around, I've done things, but, you know, it's all within my realm of control. I can control this anytime I want.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he thinks like that. I think he might say it, but he knows he's going to continue doing it. And I frankly don't care whatever he wants to do. I just care about the people that he's going to govern with that mind. That's my issue.
Because the people that he's going to be having authority over are the ones that are going to have to be under his dictate, and his dictate is not exactly of sound mind.
And let me tell you, his credentials are very poor, because the time that he spent at the House of Representatives, he hardly ever enacted a law.
Well, that's what in history we would call many times a populist leader, because he feeds on a cause that becomes a populist fervor that people begin to latch on, and they begin to surge with great enthusiasm, but it lacks substance, and that's populist leaders have come and gone many times, and I think he's the type that feeds into populism very easily.
Well, that's fine, and we will continue having them. This is not the end of.
That's inevitable. Yeah,
right. They will continue. The problem is that this guy might, I don't think it's going to happen, but could possibly become the mayor of New York. That's the issue.
Let me ask you, what kind of damage do you think he's already caused based on my opening editorial of this man?
Well, I think he has done a damage to himself and to his possibilities of winning the election. Obviously, you see the polls and his approval rate has...
But Alfredo, I'm talking about the kid that is watching TV and happens to come across a news segment, what is this about this guy that did he did what, and you know, what about more innocent minds like that? That's what I'm talking about.
Let me tell you, the damage will depend on the kind of family that these kids are. That's what it amounts to. Obviously, our society has become more accepting and permissive all around, and others are not. Others try to keep the sense of the traditional family present, and but you know, to this extreme that this public figure is publicizing himself, you know, and the effect and impact that it has in the American family will depend on the guidance that each family has with the father and the mother.
You said something that's, I think, very dangerous also as possible collateral damage. The population has become dangerously permissive and accepting to the point where, you know, they are no longer as morally outraged.
No, that definitely has changed over the years.
And
it's a result of the concept of open-mindedness, tolerance, and which is fine in certain areas. However, you should never sacrifice moral concepts for the sake of open-mindedness.
Right. How do you compare Wiener's actions to other public officials? How do you compare it to this guy in San Diego, the mayor of San Diego out there, whom I'm sure you've heard of? They want to recall him because he's been broaching women.
He's been harassing.
Bill Clinton or this other guy from New York.
What these guys have done, you know, history is full of them. You know, it's part of the story of mankind. This guy Wiener is just more childish, immature, and stupid.
I think that immaturity and stupidity distinctly separates him from all the rest.
From the rest, absolutely.
The way he went about it was so extraordinarily cheap and brazen.
He gets violent when he wants to, you know, defend the indefensible. The reaction is as bad as the action.
Yeah. You know, Alfred, what do you say about the people of New York here? Because as I was preparing this show, I was thinking, my God, from Giuliani to Wiener?
I know. That's great.
What you're talking about such incredible pendulum extremes. How do you get a fix on the people of New York?
Well, you know, it's incredible, I know, but, you know, it happens. It's, you know, like sometimes bad things happen. It happens when, because these populist leaders, you know, I don't think he's a leader, but he pretends to be one. He wants to lead New York. Their language and their verbosity or being articulate is a very dangerous combination when you're a populist and you're articulate. Yeah. And yes, he's articulate, although his presence to me is nothing attractive. but to other people, he recurs to the class warfare. He recurs to racism, and he recurs to things that might give him certain edge over others, and sometimes masses do get blind, George, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that happens everywhere in the planet. No, doesn't matter that if it's first world country or third or fourth or fifth world, you know, masses get blind. And don't
well, you know, within these masses, and I hear what you're saying. I understand. I would even agree because that's where people come from. They come from their own masses and clusters of people.
Right.
But within that, I have to get this one question in and see what your attitude on this is. Knowing that the masses can produce a product like Giuliani, the same way that the same mass can put out there a guy like Wiener, okay? To what extent is my question then? Up to what point? To what extent?
But George, wait.
Let me get my question in, because with that as a prelude, okay, knowing that these two guys came from the same core, to what extent is America a sexually repressed society?
To what?
To what extent is America a sexually repressed society?
I mean, what can I say? Historically, we as a country have had great presidents that have been followed by mediocre presidents and followed by bad presidents. You know, it's that's the history of countries. And,
right.
and it's the same society that elects. For example, we went from a Carter to a Reagan, and you see a difference there. I believe in that case, it was for the better.
Right.
But not always is the same way. Like going from a Giuliani to a Wiener. I mean, it's you scratch your head and said, "Is this for real?"
Absolutely, and not only was I scratching my head, but I was scratching like a monkey every other part of my body. I couldn't figure it out.
Well, let me tell you something, and I give a vote of confidence to the constituency of New York. You know, I'm sure, and the polls show it, that they have to realize what they have, you know, in as a choice. They have to, I mean... Wiener has been able to put a very clear and easy choice.
I think you're being very benevolent with the people of New York. It's good that you give them the benefit of the doubt, but sometimes, I don't know, I straddle on that right smack in the middle, because I think New York has enough of a conscience to realize. But on the other hand, you got another crop of New Yorkers that, boy, I really scratch my head until I lose all my hair on it. All right. Alfredo, to what can there ever be a full psychological rehabilitation for a guy like Wiener?
Probably. If you ask a psychologist, I'm sure that there is a repression type of method, you know, to control, just like Alcoholic Anonymous exist and
I'm not totally convinced of rehabilitation. I think it works some of the time on
at least to be controlled, you know. It's
maybe if he's heavily medicated or something, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not an expert at that.
No, I know, but you know, just as a social prediction, I would even say that I'm not much of a believer in it. Even though I think it can help people, but to be fully rehabilitated, like in Wiener's case, to do something like what he did, to me is so out there.
Well, I have also a problem that I don't see a frank repentance.
Exactly. Which makes it worse, doesn't it?
You know, first, you know, he lies. He said that he was not going to do it again. Well, he continued doing it several times, and he doesn't act to being ashamed.
No remorse whatsoever. Nothing. You know, it's like
exactly,
I did something that's not any more unusual than the next guy next door.
Right.
Let me ask you one final question with this Wiener case before we move on to the next segment. After this whole episode, could he run for public office and win again in the future if he doesn't win the mayoral race?
Well, I'm sure he will try again. He has no problem with public shame, you know.
No, but do you think that the people of New York will give him that confidence?
Well,
maybe if he runs for governor or something, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure he will try. He will continue having his little group that will... You know, today you see the news and you still see some people that has Wiener for mayor. I'm sure he will continue trying, and but his performance or
I'm sure it wouldn't surprise me at all if he wins. Okay,
I'm giving a vote of confidence to the voters in New York. I can't believe that will happen. Because if that happens, look out. I'm not that concerned about himself, but us as a society.
All right, let's bring this first segment to an end. Our next segment is about the Trayvon Martin case. In this case, is it an example of a rule of law or a rule of order? And how did President Obama react to this decision? We'll discuss the consequences of these issues next. But first, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss the Trayvon Martin case with Alfredo Rodriguez Walling on History and You in just a moment.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX, data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX. Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotti is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotti website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystacyfrotti.com today.
Okay, and we are back with my co-host for this evening's show, Alfredo Rodriguez Walling, to discuss the fallout of the Trayvon Martin case on History and You. Again, let me start by sharing a few thoughts about the case, and then we'll discuss with any callers, if any, the effect it's had on people. I believe that what killed Trayvon Martin was black racism. The United States has had a very long and sad history of racism, having it mostly manifested in the South. The violence and the suffering there was, and for some still remains, unspeakable for many families. But it wasn't until attitudes and human hearts sought a respite, reconciliation, and a redefinition of legal recognitions that a new level of tolerance rose to predominate the landscape. Since the 1970s, black integration into white America began to experience remarkable gains, but not without residuals of racist pockets coming from black leaders. Leaders who were unable to rest quietly without first reminding black folks that whites are never to be trusted, that the specter of a bloody past is never to be forgotten, and that whites, for all of their public clamor for equality, will always consider blacks to be inferior. When Trayvon Martin was walking the neighborhood that night, he was walking it with an embedded attitude of black racism that could have only been acquired by learning it. And from where, I wonder? When George Zimmerman saw Trayvon that night, he followed him out of a sense of duty, the duty to protect the neighborhood, and reasonable suspicion because of the way he was dressed, particularly with the hood on his head, along with the late hour of the night that Trayvon decided to be out. It didn't take long before Zimmerman's attempt to follow Trayvon turned into a stepped-up pursuit. When the encounter came to fruition, a struggle for life ensued between black racism's right to roam freely, as expressed by Trayvon Martin, and perhaps an excess of zeal to perform his duty, as expressed by George Zimmerman. From that struggle, Zimmerman reasonably feared for his life. He brandished a weapon and fired based on Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Trayvon Martin lost his life. Now, no one in their right mind will ever debate the fact that what happened that night was very tragic and sad. And to have another homicide occur based on the claim of a hate crime or other white racist overture is even more sad, more pointless, and dangerous to consider. However, the law is the law, and our Sixth Amendment procedural due process was exercised and preserved. Through a jury of his peers, George Zimmerman was tried and found not guilty. But here is where I begin to take issue with this situation. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton begin to see this case as a window of opportunity to advance the attention of the NAACP and the ACLU by inciting a propaganda campaign to further divide and exacerbate race relations in the country. In short, they wanted to advance the interests of their cause, black racism. By publicly denouncing the legitimate decision of a trial by jury, eliciting public sympathy drawn from the history of American race relations, soliciting the embrace of a liberal media, and with the endorsement of the president's approval, Jackson and Sharpton became the promoters of race hustlers around the country, eager to advocate black racism. Incredibly, the ACLU is still trying to charge Zimmerman of a hate crime based on multiple violations of Trayvon's civil rights, even after the FBI had already conducted a full investigation of the crime in question and concluded that there was no evidence to support such a charge. Therefore, no violations had occurred. By their efforts at reigniting old fears and hatreds, Jackson and Sharpton continue to dangerously divide the country. But the ultimate expression of justifying race division came from President Obama. In a televised nationwide presidential address, Barack Obama sided and sympathized with the prosecution of the case. And while he acknowledged the jury's decision reluctantly, his slant for favoring Trayvon Martin's side was never doubted, but it was also very inappropriate. For a president to remind our nation of how painful it was to be an African American in this country from years past was not only adding fuel to the fire of black racism, but the message also worked right into the hands of Jackson and Sharpton. What he should have done was to keep his personal opinions to himself. I would have told him, you're the president, for God's sakes. You're supposed to lead people, not divide them any further than what they already are. Did Obama really think that he was going to heal the wounds of the nation by pandering the black cause? Instead of giving a neutral and unifying message of hope for our citizens to try and iron out all of our difficulties, this presidential pompous ass divides us even further. At the moment when he said what he said, his black status became more important to him than his duty as a president representing the democratic interest of all people. This is the kind of leadership we have in the White House today. This is what Americans voted into office twice. I was struck by the degree of personal arrogance he displayed while showing his bias for Trayvon's side, and the extent of personal disdain with which he expressed stark disapproval of the trial's outcome. It is equally contemptible to see how defiant or just downright brazen at times he can be with certain public issues as president, and how the liberal media continue to embrace him as one of their own sons. Alfred?
Yes.
I heard that Obama invited Sharpton to the White House. Was the same invitation extended to Bill O'Reilly in the name of unifying a nation?
Of course not. Of course not. That he's not interested in that. I mean, it's the whole thing was very unfortunate. What happened? It was a tragedy, whichever way you want to look at it. But the thing that it became not a human tragedy, but a race issue. You know, to an extreme that it lost the real concept of what had happened. Maybe in another state, you know, there is that law of defending your own ground doesn't exist. Well, maybe he would have been convicted. It so happens that it happened in the state of Florida, where that law exists. And the jury, with the evidence that they were given, primarily a jury of women, and one of them even a black lady, even though their heart was, bleeding because of the loss of a child, the rule of law is the one that has to prevail.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
If Trayvon would have been my son, I would be deeply, hurt, and of course, I would try by all means for the prosecution to win. But the thing is that it became a race issue. A race issue that didn't happen when O.J. Simpson was acquitted
exactly.
in 1995,
right.
when it was the reverse situation.
Right.
I don't recall back then that President Clinton started some kind of campaign against the jury because they had acquitted O.J. Simpson.
Right.
There is a parallel in terms of the race issue. These were both horrendous situations where people died in each case.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but this thing that they give it a twist to become a race issue. You know, you have to realize that every single day in this country, hundreds of blacks are killed by the hands of other blacks.
Sure.
You don't hear anything about it.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to bring that up in just a moment. What seems also incredible to me, aside from the fact that the double standard, which is what you're talking about, is only too obvious. The fact that this country went into a civil war, Alfredo, a civil war over racist attitudes and slavery, the issue of slavery, obviously, in the South. And for the people that have studied that area in more depth, they would know that there were several other reasons as causes that served in provoking the war as well, but slavery was a huge reason.
Right.
And to think that after the war was fought, after just over 500,000 people were killed from that war, after so many decades after that war, the 1870s, the 1880s, 1890s, even into the beginning or the first half or just over the first half of the 20th century, so many attitudes continue to prevail. And right when things begin to seem to level out some, along come these guys to exacerbate and stir up that issue again. when there are so many more, and I emphasize the word more, black against black crimes that are not heard of or reported or brought to the forefront of the media, the liberal media in particular? That is outrageous.
And we're not even mentioning black against white. We're not even getting into that. I'm just talking blacks against blacks. But you know, this is a subject that can expand into hours because it has so many repercussions.
Sure.
For example, and let's talk about a white on white type of issue, and this is Casey Anthony, who was accused of killing the daughter.
Right.
A case where so many things, you know, came up as evidence. A mother that reports to the police the loss of her child 1 month after, and so many other evidence that pointed her as being the person who killed her daughter. And then she, because of technicalities, and that's the rule of law, no evidence was brought in that would convict her. And she was acquitted. And yes, people sort of... wow, no, that cannot happen. But nothing happened afterwards.
Yeah, everybody just sort of like settled in and accepted.
Accepted the,
exactly.
the decision of the jury.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, no, and that doesn't... Alfred, did the jury get this right, you think?
Frankly, I don't know the evidence that the jury was presented, and nor you nor anybody, because that's private. Obviously... that jury, the evidence that was presented was not enough to convict him, because they would have convicted him.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows, or lack of evidence, I should say.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that the slightest piece of evidence that would have pointed him to have killed Trayvon, not defending himself, would have surfaced. And he didn't. And maybe it's an injustice of life. Maybe he did have the intention of killing him without defending his ground. But the evidence was not presented.
Yeah, well, there's only up to a certain point that we are allowed to know because of what the media reports and puts out there.
And if that is the case, I feel bad about the parents, because I'm sure they are convinced that his son was killed with intentionally and not defending the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I feel about them. I just wish that if that were the real case, that the real evidence would have been presented. But it wasn't.
Go ahead, Alfred.
No, that's what I wanted to say.
Do you think that Zimmerman, and I'm asking this to tread a little bit of somewhat doubtful ground here, or maybe to cut against the grain a little bit, do you think Zimmerman was a little bit trigger happy? Do you think that he furnished more provocation?
Obviously, he's a vigilant who wanted to be the leader of his crime watch in his neighborhood. He accepted that position.
Right.
So obviously, he's a person that wanted to defend his community to an extreme. Yes, to an extreme, because he ended up killing someone. Now, the question is, did that someone try to attack him, and that's why he shot? That's something that we'll never know, and obviously no real evidence was presented to the jury.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because when you look at the law in terms of legal defenses, theoretically, I'm not speaking in any other context except the theory of the law, and what it says is that there is a way to defend yourself for your life in this case reasonably. But once that reasonableness to act in defense of your own life begins to spill over into something that is no longer reasonable, but rather provocative, or what the law also terms as an excessive use of force, then that is no longer a legitimate defense, is it? Now it begins to spill over into something different, which then can bring in the issue of intent. What then was the intent? So this is the reason why I'm asking the question. Do you think that Zimmerman became a little trigger happy or a little bit zealous in his job to protect the neighborhood?
The answer, I think it's yes. He might have. He might have. And for example, I mean, I don't even own any weapon. I don't see myself in that position. Other people are more, you know, dexterous at this type of activity.
Right.
And definitely he didn't object to be the leader of his crime watch community. Was he a little easy on the trigger? He probably was. He was warned by the police not to continue pursuing the Traven, and he disregarded that. He saw him. The police was trying to save him of this fight where he was attacked. Obviously, he was attacked, and you know his skull was hurt, etc. You know. That was the advice that the police gave him.
Right.
Now, what he felt as a threat to his life, I think we'll never know.
Yeah, yeah.
For a fact. This is a case where the evidence that was presented by the prosecution was not fully...
Well, it's not just the evidence. The evidence is important. I agree with you. But another part that I think is just as equally important, or perhaps even more so, is the manner, the how behind presenting the evidence. How you present that evidence to a jury, I think, is also very, very important. And that's where I think Trayvon's people showed a little bit more weakness, because the defense basically just has to expose doubt and communicate that doubt to the jury, and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Alfred, let me ask you, how do you think this case has affected the legal system in this country?
I don't think it has affected the legal system. I think it has exacerbated racism. I think it has ignited a feeling of racism that I don't think it existed before the Zimmerman case.
Yeah,
I think racism is part of our history, but just by the fact that we have a black president shows what lack of racism we've had, and yet because of some people trying to exploit opportunities.
Right.
In this sense, you know, it's lamentable.
Yeah. Do you think that the case has affected the current job market in terms of hiring blacks? Do you think that the result of the case, because of the race issue, might have also spilled over into the job market?
No, I personally don't think so. I don't think so. Mm. It's just this stirring, this resentment that didn't exist and it's surfacing again. I think it's just very lamentable.
Alfred, you know, what message do you think teachers, and I ask you this because I, being one of them, as well as your wife. What message do you think teachers should bring back to the classroom in the aftermath of this Zimmerman case? What message do you think?
Method is to try to focus on the laws. That's it's just the technicalities of our system. Is the laws of our states and our country. Without getting into the emotions that racism might ignite. Don't try to get away from these issues, because I think that every time more and more our country has left behind the inequalities of black and white, I think that we have progressed a lot in that sense. So I wouldn't try to concentrate on that, but rather analyze, be analytical of the case. This is the law, this is the evidence that was presented, this is what the prosecution tried to show, and this is what the defense had to show.
You know, it's amazing to me, because this is the kind of unifying message that President Obama should have given regarding this case as president. And here we are, a couple of nobodies, and we are giving the kinds of answers that would have been much more healing and unifying. Instead, our leader gives the kind of answer that he gave.
Well, unfortunately, we're in an era of populism. And demagoguery.
Exactly right. To our own peril, too. Okay, that brings our second segment to an end. And our last segment of the show is about the kind of leadership, speaking of our leader, the kind of leadership that Barack Obama has provided the United States. Have his promises from campaign speeches come true? And where has his leadership led the American people? We'll look into these questions and more. But first, let's take another quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss the quality of presidential leadership by Barack Obama with Alfredo Rodriguez Walling on History and You in just a moment.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX. Data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX. Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotti is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacey Frotte website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystaceyfrotte.com today.
Okay, and we are back with my co-host for this evening's show, Alfredo Rodriguez-Walling, to discuss the kind of leadership President Obama has thus far provided on History and You. And just like in previous segments, allow me to share some thoughts on our elected leader, and then we'll open it up for some further discussion. Barack Obama was reelected in 2012 by a marginal majority, but certainly not a mandate. And his campaign team soon declared that it was, but it was not. This opening statement is intended to suggest to you that President Obama does not have a commanding support of the American people, does not have a commanding support of corporate America, and certainly does not have it from institutional America. With scandals inundating his days from the Department of Justice, Benghazi and the State Department, the IRS and Tea Party scrutiny, his economic woes in mishandling federal deficits in each fiscal year of his tenure, his current national debts of nearly $17 trillion and rising, the fictitious unemployment rate riddled with fillers of part-time workers, the reckless and unaffordable expense of Obamacare, the Defense Department's sequestration program, the remains of a partially paralyzed housing market, the misleading gains of a stock market which lures investor attention away from current corporate earnings and undervalued securities, but demands an immediate consideration to stocks with projected values based on their speculation of growth, the anemic posture of America's state of national security in the world, his arrogant speeches replete in rhetoric but hollow in substance, and with so much more to yell about, one has to wonder whether this guy took the Oval Office just to get back at the white man. Has it been a premeditated journey for a personal vendetta? You know, you may ask whether black racism exists. About a decade ago, I would have told you that such a thing would be difficult to consider. Today, absolutely. You'd be very naive and foolish to believe otherwise. And there are still many of this sort that remain out there who would believe it. If we did not have the 22nd Amendment to limit a president's term to just two, and Obama decided to run for a third term, consecutive term, he'd probably win again. And why? Because we are rapidly becoming the modern Romans of the 21st century in a current state of decline. With this kind of leadership, we are destined to deteriorate as a civilization and diminish as a preponderant presence in the world. Alfred, tough question for you. Could there possibly be any usefulness in the kind of leadership that Obama has provided?
Usefulness.
Can you possibly find any degree of usefulness in the kind of leadership this man has given?
Oh, no, not so far. No, I don't see any usefulness. He could have been super useful with the if he would have wanted to unite the country, to fix the economy, to better our relations in the rest of the world with other countries. I mean, he had in the palm of his hands so many opportunities.
Yes,
that it's incredible that he has not taken advantage of that. Of that overall support that he had, not only in his own country, but around the world.
Yes.
But
yes.
his self-concentration has hindered him from achieving what he could have done. And again, I question ourselves as a country, whether you voted for him or not, after having tested him for 4 years, which is a reasonable test at any type of position, and having the opportunity of having elected someone that was very well prepared to lift the economy of this country as Mitt Romney was,
yes,
and plus other things that that need fixing in this country. And we chose as a nation not to give him an opportunity, but to continue. I question ourselves, George, why we don't see as clear as we used to see before. That's something that, to me, it remains a mystery. I personally gave him a vote of confidence when he started in January of 2009. I wish he would have succeeded. But unfortunately, other issues have been more important for him. And remember that it's not him alone. He has a circle of people around him,
right,
that I don't know if I fear them more than I fear him.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that he was following his personal agenda, bringing it into office, than anything else. But
so I wish he would have succeeded. It would have been great, but unfortunately,
yeah,
he, to me, he, oh well, and it's not my opinion; it's just reality.
Yeah.
Where we are now in 2013, compared to January of 2009,
right,
he doesn't have the opportunity to blame Bush anymore. He used that for the first four,
right,
or five or
right,
6 years. I mean, he can't not use it anymore.
Right, right. And on the heels of that, how would you then evaluate his presidency as just being very, very poor and disillusioning and disappointing, as I would?
No, yes, I'm very disillusioned. I'm trying, you know, to find areas where he has succeeded. For example, how will he be remembered? By his leadership of creating Obamacare? That's what, you know, probably
a lot of people would
say. And Obamacare today represents an issue of controversy.
Exactly.
Not only at Congress.
Exactly.
But you look at all the medical profession and employers in general who are trying to find a loop in the law,
right. Right.
In order to employ only 49 people so that they are not subject to the law.
Exactly. And on the heels of that, let me also ask you, as an architect, and you have your own business, how has your business fared under the Obama administration? I'm asking also because you are directly, it couldn't be more direct than this, you are directly connected to the housing market. So how has your business fared?
In general, has suffered a lot, but most of all, the housing industry.
Yeah.
And I, as an architect, would be associated with housing in every style, whether it's single family or multifamily or recreational, about a community, and all that came to a halt.
Right.
And you know, in my years of experience, I've endured several recessions, like in 74, 82, 91, you name it, and none of them have been as severe and as prolonged as this one. And I think that in good times, any president is a good president. But a president shows his caliber and his capabilities
in
when
the
things
bad times.
Go bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just reminded, Alfredo, when I think this took place in Obama's first term, when he was talking about people's businesses, small businesses, and his famous mantra of, you didn't build that on your own. You had help. You're not the only person that built it on your own. The federal government stepped in and gave you a hand. Do you remember all that? And even with all of that controversy, this man still gets reelected, and small businesses continue to suffer as well. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's why I go back to our first segment. That's why I am hopeful but cautiously that winner will be elected. I wonder about the rationale that the voters use at the time of casting a vote.
Yeah. Alfredo, I'm sure you've heard of the latest fast food restaurant situation, the issues that are coming up with the employees asking now for $15 an hour as opposed to the current minimum wage of $7. And I couldn't help but wonder, from a corporate perspective, could Obamacare have anything to do with this? From a corporate
Everything
side.
has been impacted by Obamacare. Everything. Yeah, it's a major impact in the national economy.
Yeah, it's very pervasive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Let me ask you also something else regarding Obama, but shifting gears just a little bit. Why do you suppose Americans, and when I say Americans, I'm really referring to the American public at large, why do you suppose Americans wanted to see a black man as president before a woman?
Well, because Americans love the concept of progress.
They're both progressive.
Well, but I mean progress in the sense of overcoming the issue of racism. That's the answer that I would give. You know, we as a country like to leave, bad experiences behind us. And obviously, racism and slavery, it's a black page in our history. Yeah. We would like to leave that behind. And a way to reconciling that was electing a black president. In my respect, I don't see colors at the time of electing any of our leaders. I just see the mentality and their concepts and values. That's what I see. For example, I'm sure you are familiar with Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson.
Oh, sure, of course. Excellent, excellent example.
Ben Carson is a pediatric neurosurgeon.
Right.
Who happens to be black and has very, very sound ideas for this country. I don't know if he will aspire for a candidacy or not, but you listen to him and you hear a person that makes sense and that has values and doesn't bring racism. Having himself suffer from that in his childhood and adolescence, and yet he doesn't go that route.
The liberal media would never accept him, unfortunately.
Well, that's a shame.
It is a shame. It is a shame.
A shame because we lose opportunities of people that can help our country, and just because of this type of preferences that are not substantiated.
You know, Alfredo, I think you're bringing up an issue that I think is also very important as a point of closure, which I want to begin to bring to the fore. The idea that this is really about character, about values, about thinking of what best benefits the people that you represent once you come into office. It's not about so much being conservative or liberal. It's not so much about a Republican or being a Democrat. It's much, much more about the caliber of your character that you bring to office, to public office, with the right ideas, steered and driven by common sense, to guide you in making sound decisions for businesses and people alike. There's nothing wrong with being liberal, and I'm not chastising liberalism here or conservatism in advocating for him in any way. It's not about that. It's about character. I attack character when it goes wrong. I support
it
when it goes right. And I think that's a very important distinction to make at this point.
Absolutely. Sure.
Alfred, final question. And I sort of like want to wrap these three things together. How do you think, how do you think history will judge Barack Obama? What do you think people will best remember him for? What legacy is he going to leave behind?
I'm trying hard.
Let me start, and maybe I can give you a hand up or something. I was going to say that people might best remember Barack Obama for his populism, for his rhetoric, for his speech.
Oh, yeah, of course.
For his charisma, for all of these things.
Well,
that,
you know,
at the end of the day, when people need practical common sense help and assistance, it's not there.
Well,
it's that absence that they're going to remember him by.
Yeah, I think he will be remembered as an articulate, charismatic politician who had in his hand so many opportunities. He had it all. He had it all.
Yeah.
And yet he didn't achieve what he was meant to do.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, well, that's all the time that we have for the show tonight. Alfredo, I cannot tell you enough what a terrific co-host you have been with me this evening. Thank you so very much for sharing
your time, thank you for inviting me,
and sharing your opinions regarding our topics. And I do remain hopeful that you'll want to come back and co-host again another series of issues that concern us all. Thank you very, very much.
Absolutely. It will be my pleasure.
And stick around to get an earful of my final thoughts as well.
Okay.
Now, we've come to the final part of our show where I do wish to leave you with a final thought to consider and to further reflect regarding the signs of our times. Some final thoughts. We are the modern Romans of today. This is nothing to be proud of. From dysfunctional families of all ethnicities and races to our failing institutions that find excuses to serve unfairly, we are all plagued with moral decadence. And in case you're wondering what this really means, it means that scarcity has become a stranger to us because of a lifestyle of milk and honey that has run amok without accounting for it in any responsible way. Because the American work ethic is not what it once was, as food stamp programs are now the new idols to covet and emulate. And because our public arrogance
has made us forget how significant and how consequential the making of good choices can really be, such as making good choices in who we marry, choosing how we constitute our families, who we choose as public leaders, the values we choose to give our children, choosing how hard we should work to earn the life we live, and above all, to choose the spirituality needed to guide our lives. We must be a faith-oriented people. And the only way to get back to what we once were, to what we once had, is a return to God. For now, we are the modern Romans, a Roman breed that's prone to self-destruct by implosion because of an unwillingness to see clearly the pitfalls of our blind and misguided ambitions, which have left us with a hunger for greed that never satisfies. We are becoming more and more a failed people, hindered by flawed values that are crippling our path to a better living. There are warning calls out there, but no one is listening, except to the sounds of giggles and laughter coming from inadequate and dysfunctional people. Join me again next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. for another hour of insight by visiting my website at www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. As your host for this evening's show, this is George Rodriguez Walling, wishing for all of you a very, very pleasant evening. Good night.